Okay, good morning. I titled this Sugya 48, Laws of Tisha B'Av, but our style here, in terms of the handout at least, is a little different than in the past. We're going to be a little bit more off the cuff, very, very practical. Keep in mind, in terms of our outline, basically we're responding to a question. The question is, I appreciate the loss of Tisha B'Av. I understand the temple was destroyed. I understand many terrible things. Spanish Inquisition started. Tisha B'Av. A lot of terrible things. I'm willing to observe, but please tell me how. There's so many ups and downs and curveballs and exceptions. Tell me, what am I allowed to do? What I'm not allowed to do in nice, simple terms? And that's what I'd like to try to cover this morning. Again, we're not convincing, we're not doing the whole background of philosophy, we're going to try to be focused on practical. The story of Tisha B'Av in terms of the destruction of the temple was that the enemy entered the temple mount, broke in, on the 7th of Av. They ransacked it, 7th, 8th, they set it afire on the 9th, and it burned through the 10th. As such, of Av, as such, each one of those days has some level of seriousness. The greatest seriousness is Tisha B'Av itself when they lit it afire. But the two days before, 7th and 8th, already have a level of severity. Even those who were more lenient, let's say, with eating meat during the 9 days, but the last 3 days we take very seriously. You would really need a direct health issue to make an exception. The 8th is a little bit more. We already talk about not taking pleasure trips, even though during the 9 days, if it's safe, you know, within reason, we go for hikes, within reason, not a problem. On the day before Tisha B'Av, we're already starting into Tisha B'Av mode. And then Tisha B'Av itself is the fast day with all of its laws, which we'll get to. And then finally, the 10th of Av, when the Beis HaMikdash just continued burning, so it has some, you know, grandfather clause. It's still hanging over with some of the Tisha B'Av laws, but essentially we're moving out of it already. By noon of the 10th, everything's permitted. So this year, Tuesday is Tisha B'Av, Wednesday at noon, which, because we're on change time, it's a little bit after 1 o'clock. By 1:10, you're clean. Okay? Day before Tisha B'Av, which would be tomorrow, so I mentioned, just by way of outlining it, learning Torah and walking, going for joy trips, going for a hike very leisurely, in a joyful mind frame. Those two things are not recommended. When we say not to learn Torah, what's the reason?
It's joy.
Joy of Torah. So there are people today who will say, I'm not sure that I find learning Torah, you know, so joyous. I struggle with the words, I'm struggling, it's intense. You know, go figure. Ideally, Torah is supposed to be a joyous pursuit, and so joyous that when a person's in mourning, we don't do it. You are allowed, and it's recommended, that we study laws that pertain to Tisha B'Av, or themes of Tisha B'Av. I strongly recommend the Art Scroll Tisha B'Av service. Is phenomenal. They got everything translated with very good commentary on the bottom, and it's pretty popular. In terms of laws, just we're on the topic of recommendation, Rabbi Eider's brief review of the laws of the 3 weeks is also a very good synopsis of Jewish law.
What's that? Spell his name?
Eider, E-I-D-E-R. So if someone wanted to study, let's say, the book of Eicha, Lamentations, that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to stay focused on Tisha B'Av. Now, the real highlight, if you will, of the day before Tisha B'Av is what? The Suda HaMafsekes, do not translate it into the Last Supper. The Suda, the meal that separates between being allowed to eat and not being allowed to eat. That last meal is very skimpy. Bread, one boiled food, such as a hard-boiled egg. We generally dip it in ash. You light a match, let it burn for a moment, blow it out, and you have ash. And you dip into the ash. The concept is mourning, the destruction. Beis HaMikdash was turned to ash, and we remember that. We eat the meal sitting low with a very simple beverage, either plain water, or if you need more than that, something simple. Not soda, not alcoholic, for sure not.
Tea.
Something light and simple. The theme is that it's a meal of mourning. Now you'll ask me, if you're going to do that before the fast, how are you going to have a healthy fast? So we have a meal before that last meal. And the meal before the last meal is a generous meal. We don't eat meat because we're already in the mode of not eating meat. And we don't drink wine. Again, not appropriate. But most people try to have a generous fish meal so that there's protein there and there's carbohydrates. And you got it all worked out so that you have the energy for the fast in the meal before the last meal. But the last meal is very simple.
Is it a time requirement? Time limit between...
As long as there's a separation, because we don't wash for one meal and then bench and just wash again for the second meal. So you want to walk outside, you want to do some housework, you want to go to mincha, you want to do something in between. You don't just wash, bench. But essentially, anytime after midday, you could fulfill this rule of the last meal before the fast.
Do you have to wash for that meal?
It's proper. I think it's necessary to wash for that meal. That's what makes it into a meal. Now, you're still allowed to eat after that meal, as long as you're not eating a meal. In Judaism, we always define a meal by bread. So if you decide that you want to chomp on a granola bar after the last meal, that's fine. But the last meal has to be that simple meal. You're still allowed to eat, you're still allowed to drink, you can get your last cup of water, that's all fine. But the last meal has to be that simple meal that we eat sitting down. You're still allowed to wear your shoes during that meal because it's not Tisha B'Av yet. It's a meal before the fast. Yeah?
The last meal should or should not contain bread?
Should.
Should.
That's what makes it a meal.
Okay. But both meals, you said, have to contain bread, right?
The meal before the last meal, I don't know if it technically has to contain bread, necessarily.
Oh, that is to do with the wash.
It's proper. I'll get to it in a second, why. But essentially, you know, that's a health issue. Go eat whatever you feel is going to do it for you for the fast. But the meal that's the mitzvah, the Suda HaMafsekes, that last meal before the fast, you got to wash, otherwise it's not a meal. And likewise, snacking afterwards is permitted, as long as it's not a meal. Now, there's an opinion, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that points out that in the time of the Second Temple, when the temple was standing, Tisha B'Av was a holiday. Because the first temple was destroyed, they mourned it for 70 years, they rebuilt the temple, now they're living in the time of the Second Temple. Tisha B'Av is a day of rejoicing. Used to be a day of mourning, but now the temple's standing, isn't that great? And they used to have a festive meal. So we can't do that on Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says we do that before Tisha B'Av. So there is a religious quality to that first meal. It's the, quote, festive meal that we're yearning for to be able to do on Tisha B'Av in years to come.
We could do that when the third temple is here.
When the third temple comes, Tisha B'Av is going to be a day of rejoicing. So the first meal is to remember the hope for rebuilding. And the second, last meal before the fast is a meal of mourners.
I'm sorry, what is it, the mizumar?
Good. Mizuman is that invitation when we're about to bench that we call out to the other people, let us bench. And you only do that when you have three men eating together. The rule by this mourner's meal is that we're not connected. Each person is in solitude, mourning, broken, and he's not connecting, he's not socializing. And therefore there's no mizuman. We're not eating together. Even if perchance we end up eating in the same room, one person in that corner, one person in that corner, but we're not eating together. Everybody's on their own in mourning. We're not declaring a social meal. And therefore, we don't do mizuman by this meal. One final comment. Drinking during the day before the fast. Some people think that they're going to drink a lot right before the fast. Your body can't absorb it. The trick of drinking before a fast means for the 24 hours preceding the fast. And you drink more than normal. You hydrate your body, and the body absorbs it and becomes hydrated over the 24 hours before the fast. And that helps. But again, drinking 6 cups of liquid minutes before the fast, your body can't handle it. It's not going to help you. It doesn't do anything.
It's the opposite effect.
I don't know.
You feel terrible harm, don't it?
Yeah. You feel bloated.
How about kids with the, at what age do you involve the kids in the ash meal?
In that meal? It's a question of sensitivity. We don't typically push on children mourning topics. Very interesting sensitivity. But Tisha B'Av, as much as it's mourning, it's also like, it's, I don't know, it's exciting, it's different. And we don't push it on the kids until they're after 9 years old, 10 years old, until they're really approaching Bar Bat Mitzvah. But I don't see a problem with involving them. I find that my kids watch me doing it and they all want an egg for themselves and they all want ash for themselves and they all want to feel like they belong. And that's fine. But to push it on them, you know, like they're busy playing and, no, you have to eat the ash with the egg, that's not correct. That's not... you're not allowed during Tisha B'Av to give them something that they're not supposed to be doing. For example, you don't give them their shoes. If they're supposed to be wearing sneakers or slippers, non-leather footwear, so you don't give them their shoes. But if you catch them wearing their shoes, that's an education issue and you have to know if it's worth saying something or not. But food obviously is not an issue because they're supposed to be eating. So you're giving them the food they're supposed to eat. until they really approach Bar Bat Mitzvah exactly the year before, let's say, something like that. But again, the mourning issues, we don't typically push on a child, but within the realm of swept up in the momentum, let them participate. That's fine.
The kids come to IHOP to listen?
Not usually.
They don't usually come.
It's very late.
It's late,
isn't it? Yeah. Usually what I find is that people try to do some level of service, some level of officiation at home. Or in a group. You know, tell them what Tisha B'Av is about. Interpersonal relationships, which is one of the reasons the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And you discuss the concepts so that intellectually they're growing into what's important to the Jewish people. But to force them into an observance of mourning, we typically don't do.
What are there are different ways to create ash. What is the best way?
I recommend you light a match, you let it burn for a few moments, and then you have it go out. And you have ash. I smear it on a plate, and you've got particles of ash. You dip your bread, you can dip your egg, and if you don't find it appetizing, flick it off. But the symbolism is there. You went ahead and you dipped. You flick it off if it bothers you.
It doesn't matter which food is dipped, or should all of it?
It doesn't matter. It's not such a technical thing, but it's proper to have ash involved in the process. We have the same thing that when a groom, a chassan, is ready to walk down the aisle to get married, we put ash on the spot of his tefillin, where the crown of tefillin would normally go. We put ash there to remind him of the destruction of Jerusalem, that on his most momentous day of his life, we hope, he puts ash there to remind him that Jerusalem is still mourning. You're happy. Be happy. But Jerusalem's still mourning. And how do you get that ash? It's very simple. We don't have to walk around with bottled ash produced by a company. You carry a match, you light the match, you have it go out, and as soon as the match cools down, you just tap it, and you have your ash.
Now, if you don't need an egg, are there any other suggested foods? Or just anything,
cooked food.
Anything
One cooked food, but not two.
One, like a boiled vegetable?
Yeah, no problem. Not so technical. It's not the Pesach Seder. You know, have to have matzah. But it should be, mourner's meal is defined as only one cooked food and not two. Laws of the day. So I tried to hit on pretty much everything. If you have any questions, you know, interject. The famous one, eating and drinking. So obviously, generally, we don't eat and drink. From sunset, which this year would be Monday, until nightfall, which would be Tuesday night. In Cherry Hill, I mean, I don't have the times exactly in front of me, but approximately we're talking about from about 8:25 on Monday, or 8:20, the custom is to add a little bit, until approximately 9 o'clock or 9:05 on Tuesday evening. So generally we don't eat or drink. What about someone who has to? You have someone, health issue, typical case is elderly person. What do you recommend for them? So they should eat, but they should eat minimal type foods. Foods to sustain, not foods of self-indulgence. The prevalent custom is we're not so careful about it, but it just shouldn't go overboard. It's not the time for the 7-course meal. Wrong day. The same thing for kids. Nothing wrong with giving them their favorite food in terms of making sure that they eat healthy. But to give them the absolute treat, the thing that in your home is unusual to be given, So that's, it's not a Tisha B'Av, it's not a Yom Tov. It's a day that they should eat healthy. And that's fine. Many people do introduce some level of treats because you want the kids to behave a little bit better. Because they're basically, typically, homebound, more or less. You stay in the air conditioning and you have some level of treats, but again, not indulging. If someone does eat, so then just like on the holidays, we have an insert. For the holidays, so on Tisha B'Av, there's an insert of Nachem, may God comfort us. Where is that printed? It's not printed in Grace After Meals and Berachas HaMazon, because typically people aren't eating on Tisha B'Av. But it is printed in Shmona Esrei. So you just have to be savvy. And if a person is eating on Tisha B'Av, they have to know that when they say Grace After Meals, you have to go to Shmona Esrei to find the prayer of Nachim.
Where is it inserted?
It's put in instead of Yalav Yavo. And it's found in Shmona Esrei by the blessing of Yerushalayim, of Jerusalem.
So like if, when our, my kids are going to be...
Gorgeous, Cindy! $1 million question. What's the question? The kids are eating. Are they included that they should be saying Nachem? And the answer is, drum roll please.
No.
No. Why? Because the kids are benching for education. And the assumption is, what are you educating for when they are bar bat mitzvah? The assumption is, when they're bar bat mitzvah, they will not be eating. They will be fasting. We assume that they'll be healthy children, and they'll be fasting. So there's no need to train them how to bench on Tisha B'Av. We assume they're not going to be benching on Tisha B'Av. If perchance, in the course of life, it ends up happening when they're, you know, 80, 90 years old, such a thing happens that they have to eat one year, so they'll figure out it then. But we don't have to train them for that.
Well, there won't be Tisha B'Av because we made them in Gashon
Bihu. That's correct. Well said. Good. And that's what I wrote, prayer of Nachem for sick, but not for children. We don't put that on the kids because the assumption is that they won't be eating. Another common question is, if a person has to take medicine on Tisha B'Av, so the first line of defense is that we try to avoid it. If you could take the pill at 8 o'clock on Monday and skip the one dose of Tuesday morning and take the next dose Tuesday night after you broke your fast, if that's possible, so then you do that and you avoid the question. Right? Simple solution, if it works. But what happens when that doesn't work? You're just starting an antibiotic, let's say, and you can't afford to skip one of the early doses. So if it's a pill, you're on very good turf. It's not a food. The restriction of Tisha B'Av is eating. A pill is not eating. Swallow it, no problem. If it's something that's good tasting, or if you need to take the pill together with something good tasting, like water, plain ordinary water, I don't know the level of hardness of the water, but plain ordinary water is considered a food. So how do you handle that? So the most lenient approach, which I came across, Nitei Gavriel and Deborah Tzin have a statement, they refer to it as a teaspoon of water. And they say if you get the pill in the right position and you just take one teaspoon, they feel that's not a violation of the fast. The water has the status of medicinal need, and they let that through. There are other approaches. People who want to be a little bit more conscious, they try to come up with a liquid that's bad tasting. Someone once suggested to me lemon juice, which is not essentially bad tasting, but in such high concentration, it's bad tasting, and it's just...
You're going to be so thirsty afterwards.
You're going to be so thirsty afterwards.
No, are you supposed to use it in that concentration?
You're not supposed to, but it's not going to hurt you. 1 teaspoon, I don't think, is going to hurt you. I don't know. I never tried it. I can't recommend. I'm brainstorming here. I got a different suggestion recently from somebody who told me that Mylanta is bad tasting.
That could make a person sick.
1 teaspoon is not going to hurt the person. It's very thick, right?
You're not requiring that, are you?
No, I'm telling you that, you know, you want to approach the lenient, you know, simple approach, a teaspoon of water just for the medicinal need, and we can let that through. I'm just, by way of discussion, I'm pointing out that people do try to come up with a food grade bad tasting item.
Can you put ash in the water?
If I don't know, that's going to make it bad tasting. It may make it less than appetizing. I don't know if it's going to make it bad tasting. For the humor of it, let me continue and tell you that there's a Mishnah in Yuma about Yom Kippur that says that if a person drinks pickle juice, it's not considered a violation of Yom Kippur. But they're not talking about our pickle juice. Our pickle juice is water with a little... They're talking about pickle juice. And that's also an item that's not considered edible because it's so spicy. And again, I don't know if any of these solutions will really work for you, because the taste or the negative and the concentration and everything else, being that you're fasting, I'm not sure. But the common approach is to try to avoid that dose if that's medically acceptable. And if it's not, then you figure out a way to take the pill. If you need it for health reasons, so you figure it out, whatever it's going to take to be able to take the pill. Yeah.
The main reason, do not get a pleasure from liquids. If somebody doesn't like milk, and there are plenty of people who don't like milk, they can use a spoon of milk.
That's an interesting, it's an interesting approach. By way of debate, if this was a Talmud class, then we would start debating, but it's still a food. It's recognized as a food.
Like beer. Just,
I personally don't like beer, let's say, right? So, but that doesn't make it not a food. Mm-hmm. You certainly wouldn't be allowed to drink beer on Tisha B'Av, you know, just because you don't like it. That we all understand. Our question is how to handle the 1 teaspoon or whatever amount, half an ounce of water that I gotta take because otherwise I can't get this pill down, how you should handle it. So, but that would not be good.
Some people.
No, when we talk about non-food, we mean food-grade non-food. We mean something that will not hurt the human being. Yeah.
Coffee,
what?
On Yom Kippur.
Yes.
When I was nursing or pregnant or whatever, if I had to drink during the day, I had to drink like an olive, less than an olive amount. So it was spaced out time-wise and
correct.
Now that does not apply here because if, two questions. Am I correct that does not apply here? And
mainstream approach on Tisha B'Av is that if a person is that sick that they have to eat, we allow them to eat. There is a borderline case, according to some opinions, where the person just needs a little bit and some authorities approach it the same as Yom Kippur, where we space it. And that works sometimes with a person who it really hurts them that they can't fast. They're devastated that they can't fast. And we kind of strike a compromise with them. Just eat what you need type of thing. Most of the cases that I've encountered, the person is really ill. We're talking about somebody in the hospital who's fighting an illness, and they're on intravenous antibiotics, and like, we're looking for them to eat to strengthen themselves. We're not looking to start striking deals. Mm-hmm. And on the contrary, you either approach them personally and encourage them, or you call them and you just tell them, like, this is what Hashem wants from you on this particular Tisha B'Av. And you're going to do it because that's what you got to do. Just sometimes it's harder to do the opposite of the mitzvah because you're so trained and you really want to do the mitzvah. There's a story during the Holocaust of Jews on Pesach who had to eat bread because that's all they had. And they desperately wished that they had matzah, but they don't have it. And not to eat the bread is also a death sentence. They didn't have much of a ration that they could afford not to eat the bread. They sat down Seder night with the bread, and they said a prayer. I think I have a copy of it at home. And the prayer was, Hashem, you commanded us to fulfill the mitzvahs of Pesach. And they said the whole story of Pesach and what should be done on Seder night. But you also said in your Torah that requirements to sustain life take precedence over the laws of Pesach, and we're hereby going to eat this bread to fulfill your law under these circumstances. And it's like you read it, your heart melts looking at what these people went through, how hard it was for them to eat that bread, but that's what the Torah wants of them under those circumstances. And sometimes when you have somebody particularly who's been ingrained to observe Torah all their lives, it's very hard for them to break their fast on Tisha B'Av. And sometimes they need encouragement. Just a reminder, that's what Hashem wants of you under these circumstances. So again, getting back to your question, if a person is really sick, then generally they just eat. And the only thing we say is don't indulge. If a person is in that very borderline case, so then there is this concept of take a teaspoon, take a this, take a that, you know, and it's not considered breaking your fast, you're just eating what you need to keep going. But that's not the common case that I've encountered. Usually it's either black or white.
Your second question was, I was reading a book, I think it's called To Be a Jew, or To Pray as a Jew, I can't remember the name of the...
Donnan?
Yes.
Good.
So in them, and I looked at the beginning to see who, like, gave a little stamp of approval, and I couldn't really figure out, except that the Rosh Yeshiva of YU was somehow involved in the foreword or something like that, so I wasn't sure. And it says in there that it's pretty lenient on Tisha B'Av. If someone isn't feeling well, you don't have to like be at the end. If you don't feel well, you eat. How accurate is that? Because I wasn't sure how to take the words of the book. If to take it as...
Yeah, it's a little bit delicate. We push ourselves. We try. We would prefer to crawl into bed and not break the fast and stay in air conditioning and not break the fast than to just do our daily thing and say, okay, I'm not feeling well, now it's time to break the fast. We would push ourselves. But what his point is that it's not like Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we really would do anything to make sure that you can fast through, and we push ourselves significantly more. But yeah, on Tisha B'Av, a person feels sickly, at a certain point, it's correct to break the fast. That's correct. Whereas Yom Kippur, you know, we push. We try. Mm-hmm. If it's a true danger to health, so any fast, there's nothing to talk about. If it's a true danger to health. But a human being has a significant threshold that sometimes we're just not aware of. You could summon up still. If you take it easy, if you purposely lie down, it's possible to do a lot more than we realize. If it's true health, obviously you break. Yeah.
Well, I guess the same logic, like on Tisha B'Av, melacha is allowed, but we recommend it strongly to limit all regular, normal working activities to at least until the midday, right?
Okay. It's a little bit different in, you know, whether it's what we would call a true law or more of a custom. But yeah, it's an example of how we push ourselves even though there's an out, if necessary. If necessary, person stands to lose a lot of money, you're allowed to work on Tisha B'Av. But we push ourselves to try not to. Working as in business. You're allowed to drive in a car on Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to do... It's not Shabbos type work. We're talking about work that will distract you from the morning.
Going to school.
going to school would be an example of something that we would try to avoid. There are two cutoffs of if a person needs to, when it would be more acceptable. One is after kinos, meaning you put in your time of mourning, and then, you know, it's already getting a little bit later into the day when a person is looking for what they're supposed to do exactly. And the other cutoff is midday. So I know a lot of people who feel that they have to go to work on Tisha B'Av day for whatever reason. They figure out they can't take it as an off day, but they'll go a little bit later. They'll make sure to put in the time for the Tisha B'Av service, and then they'll go to work afterwards. And if that's necessary, that's necessary. That's a comfortable way to balance the need.
If, let's say, you're choking or say you swallow a piece of dust and you need just a little bit of water to catch yourself, can you take the water, or does it have to be some kind of distasteful liquid?
Again, you'll use your own judgment. I'm giving you the parameters. I'm telling you, you know, if you ask the rabbi, this is what we're working with. There is this concept that if a person needs a teaspoon of water for health reasons, that we could squeeze that by for the health reason. But there's this whole discussion of in search of a liquid that's still food grade, but is not considered normally as a food. Still a food grade item. And they have different items in industry, for sure. They have such things. In the kashrus world, they called it a food grade pogame. It's food grade. It's not going to hurt anybody, but it's highly distasteful. And sometimes in the circulation water, they have to put that in because it sometimes gets tastes from non kosher, whatever. They want to kill those tastes, but they don't want to kill the people, you know? So it has to be food grade, and it just ruins the taste that's coming in from whatever source, non-kosher source. It's no longer an edible item as far as people's tastes go, but it won't hurt you. Physically, it won't hurt you. What?
Mouthwash.
Oh, we'll get to mouthwash in a second.
I mean, you could drink it.
No, don't drink it. Don't drink mouthwash. Okay. Also, on the topic of eating and drinking, we don't normally take water into our mouths because we're afraid we're going to swallow it. So what about brushing your teeth? So our recommendation is on Tisha B'Av morning not to brush your teeth with toothpaste, because you're going to have to rinse with water. And our prevalent custom is not to take water into your mouth. Now, could I justify it? I mean, let's go through the logic. You could justify anything, because now that you've done the toothpaste, your mouth is dirty, and you're allowed to wash off dirty parts of your body. So now you're going to wash it off with clean water. But to bring yourself into that setting, I think, is unnecessary. Prevalent custom is to brush your teeth before the fast, and you could certainly brush your teeth after the fast. So we're just talking about the morning of Tisha B'Av. My recommendation is to brush your teeth with a dry toothbrush, not introducing water, not introducing toothpaste that will later require water. And then if a person wants to freshen up, they can, if they feel dirty, they can still use mouthwash. Mouthwash, again, is not considered an edible item. We're not concerned that you're going to swallow it. And that should do it in terms of freshening up. After the class, I will ask the endorsement of our local dentist if he thinks that dental hygiene has been compromised if we skip one day of toothbrushing with a dental association endorsed toothpaste.
No.
Okay. Leather shoes. So we don't wear leather shoes or shoes that have any support of leather. So even if it's just the outer casing that's holding it together, it's giving it support, if it has leather, we don't wear such a shoe on Tisha B'Av. Today there's plenty of options. Some sneakers obviously do have leather, but there are plenty of sneakers or slippers that a person can get that are truly plastic. My mother once went into a store to try to buy Tisha B'Av slippers, and she tried on a pair of slippers, sneakers, whatever they were, and she wanted to make sure that there's no leather in this item. So she keeps asking the salesperson to make sure there's not leather, right? There's no leather in this, right? And finally, the woman's just like, she didn't feel it was a very relevant question. She kept shrugging it off. Finally, she says, "Ma'am, for $7.99, you ain't getting leather." And that sometimes is the best indication that you got your Tisha B'Av slippers.
Well, the belt is okay.
Belt is fine. It's footwear that we're concerned with. If a person finds themselves accidentally that you don't have Tisha B'Av footwear, and all you got is a pair of shoes, or if you're going to work and for whatever reason sneakers didn't work out, so there is a law that you're allowed to wear the shoes if you would be prone to ridicule from non-Jews. I would extend that today if you'd be prone to ridicule from Jews. And what is done, obviously try to get Tisha B'Av footwear. If it really doesn't work, what is done is we put a little sand into the shoe so that we know that it's uncomfortable. We know that we're not getting the comfortable support of a good leather shoe, but we don't have to get ridiculed for it. And the same thing, walking to and from the car, if a person needs footwear and got messed up, they forgot their sneakers, whatever it is, again, you could wear the shoes for the safety of your feet to and from, but we prefer that something be done so that you don't get the enjoyment of what we describe as a good leather shoe. And that's with the sand, a drop of pebbles or something. You know the joke, when you get a pebble in your shoe, it feels like a mountain, and then you finally get to it and it's this little pebble. It doesn't take much to make a shoe a little bit uncomfortable. And that's all that's involved if a person finds themselves with that need.
People have like really serious foot problems.
If there's a health reason, then you do what you need to. Yeah. You think about it. The health reason is certainly worse than the ridicule. Yeah, I mean, you know, if it's a person can't walk to the bathroom without the proper shoes, then that's what they're going to do. Yeah. If they can avoid it, meaning they only need those shoes when they go for walks. Mm-hmm. But when they're lounging around the house, they use slippers. So then, you know, Tisha B'Av is no worse. We try. Yeah.
This custom comes from not wearing comfortable shoes, or because at the time or the temple, we would not be entering Beis Mikdash wearing shoes?
No, it has to do with comfort. And it's something that's a drop harder for us to tune into because we have sneakers today that are far more comfortable than shoes to us. But the approach in Jewish law is whatever they forbade, we will observe, but we're not introducing new prohibitions. So no rabbi got up and said sneakers should also be prohibited because they're even more comfortable. We don't do that. You know, we observe the law the way they legislated it on leather, because leather is a true shoe. It's formed, that's the way it is, it's supportive. And sneakers, as long as they don't have leather, are fine.
And it's only shoes, it's not like jackets or anything.
Correct,
else.
Correct. Only shoes. They legislated against footwear. There's a law of anointing that you're not allowed to anoint on Tisha B'Av. These laws, by the way, are the same for Yom Kippur. But we need to clarify that putting on deodorant because a person feels that they're going to get sweaty, that's fine. That's not anointing. We're talking about anointing meaning like perfume or smearing on a good oil. They used to smear on olive oil, different things like that. So it's not a prevalent application in our time. However, if someone were to want to put on perfume or cologne, and they wanted to put it on their skin as opposed to their garment, so we would not do that on Tisha B'Av. Again, to put perfume or cologne on skin, we don't do on Tisha B'Av. Person wants to circumvent it, you know, you put it on your clothing. You know, we can't stop that, even though it also is not really in the spirit, excuse the pun, of the day. But, you know, that. But putting on skin something that's favorable, pleasant, indulging, is this rule.
Like a moisturizing cream.
Right. So very often the moisturizing creams are being put on for a health reason. And if that's true, the person has a rash, then we're back to the medicinal, and it's fine. If a person were to put on moisturizing cream on their face just because what on Tisha B'Av we call indulging, even though the person may not think of it like that, so that you don't do on Tisha B'Av. That's a good application. Sunscreen we could call medicinal if you're going to be walking to shul, let's say. Not that you have to walk, but if that's the way it turns out, so you're going to be out walking, so you could put that on, and that's medicinal. But that moisturizing is a good example. If it's a rash, poison ivy creams, you know, that's fine. That's medicinal. But you're putting it on in order to, on Tisha B'Av, we call that indulging.
So some deodorants are
Yeah, so as long as you're not playing a game, it's fine. Okay. A person puts on deodorant for the purpose of counteracting normal human sweat. That's in the realm of practical, medicinal, whatever you want to call it. And we don't have a problem with that.
Okay. And then, say if you want to use some type of alcohol disinfectant for certain areas that might have bacteria for whatever reason.
Sounds medicinal to me.
Okay.
You got to always know how to phrase a question. You know, you got to throw the word bacteria into the question. And then, you know, you get a different answer. But that's true. Sometimes you ask a question and you get an answer that does not seem right to you. And if it doesn't seem right, you have the right to re-ask the question. But change the wording or, like, get your point across, because sometimes that does happen. Yeah.
This law applicable not just on the day of Tisha B'Av, but the last 9 days of preceding Tisha B'Av, right?
No, bathing.
I thought you're not supposed to use perfume for the last 9 days.
I'm not familiar with such
no?
a problem.
I'm wrong.
We're not on Tuesday.
Just
Tisha B'Av.
Next
the following
Tuesday.
Week. Good. Oh, otherwise we'll give you a ride. Someone. Okay. Intimate relations. So again, like Yom Kippur, we don't have intimate relations, husband and wife, on Tisha B'Av. That includes a restriction of touching, meaning hugging, kissing, etc., and endearment, such as same beds or touching beds. However, other topics between husband and wife are perfectly fine. Handing an item one to the other, no restrictions. Okay. Washing, we wash until the knuckles. You have to, normally in the morning, we're supposed to wash 3 times on each hand, alternating. Once on the right, once on the left, once on the right, once on the left, once on the right, once on the left. You can tell I have children's tapes in the house going all day. Right? Normally we wash to the wrist. On Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, you position your thumb a little bit awkward so that the knuckles are aligned, and that's how you wash. You wash just till the knuckles. Our face, we don't do a full face washing on Tisha B'Av, but if your hands are still a little moist, you could freshen up a little bit. Whatever you consider dirty, you could freshen up with the water that's on your hands. If something's dirty, you're allowed to wash it. And that goes also if a person handled something that they think is germy. We have our bacteria word again. And then a person wants to use soap. Let's say you're going to prepare lunch for the kids, and you feel that you normally wash your hands with soap before you touch food. So if you consider your hands dirty, same logic. You wash them to get off the dirt.
After you go to the bathroom?
So after the bathroom, whatever, you know, whatever you consider normal and necessary. Things that we do just out of habit or just to cover ourselves or whatever, so we think twice on Tisha B'Av. But it's, if in your perception it's dirty and it concerns you, so then it's considered dirty and you can wash it. Sitting low. Prevalent custom is that we sit on a bench that's no higher, or a chair that's no higher than 12 inches from the ground. And we consider that connected to the ground, part of the ground, and that's considered sitting low. If a person has a back problem or whatever, sitting low is not such a stringent law that, you know, like one dare not violate. Not eating on Tisha B'Av is much more serious. Sitting low is, you know, we try. Otherwise, a person can sit low even if they're off the 12-inch benchmark. Another great pun. What? Sitting on the floor is recommended.
Because if you don't have any low benches.
Straightforward on the floor is the best, but I point out that there's an allowance. Prevalent custom is to allow until 12 inches height, and I'm pointing out that it's not such a strict law. You get someone who wants to observe it, but has a little bit of a back problem. If they sit lower than normal, mm-hmm. they're still within the framework of observance.
And it's okay to say blessings when you're sitting on the floor?
Yes. Yeah. You have an issue about if while you're maneuvering, you end up touching your shoes, or you end up getting your hands dirty and all that type of stuff. And generally, we wipe them off on a towel or clothing or whatever. That's a different issue, that your hands got dirty and now you want to say a prayer. So you clean them in some method. But there's nothing wrong with saying prayers while you're, nothing disrespectful about it. It's a day of mourning. That's where we're sitting. Yeah.
Last meal, should it be at the regular height or already at 12 inch?
The last meal is at the lower height, but I object to the word already, because it's not that you start the mourning period at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You sit low for the last meal, but after that you're allowed to get up and sit regular until sunset.
Okay.
Think of the last meal as a mitzvah that you need to observe in a certain way. Tisha B'Av is not starting yet. You're allowed to wear your shoes. You're going to be allowed to eat afterwards. Allowed to brush your teeth with water, whatever you want, afterwards. It's a mitzvah that's observed in a certain way. But Tisha B'Av is not starting yet. Torah study, we mentioned before, joyous. Supposed to be, except for portions focused on the tone of the day, which is what we do. We try to study Eicha. There are authorities that maintain that for a person whose Torah study personifies persistence, and they're just pushing, and it's not really joyous like Cloud Nine, they allow it. So that's a little bit, you know, rather than wasting time or spending time gossiping, you could study Torah. If all else fails, you could be lenient and study Torah. Okay?
What about just listening to the a cappella music that was allowed all these 3 weeks?
It's inappropriate for Tisha B'Av.
And the day before Tisha B'Av?
I would say that after midday, one shouldn't do it.
Be tomorrow
after 1 o'clock
until Wednesday or until Tuesday night. Mm-hmm.
it would be correct to restrict it until Wednesday at 1.
But then any kind of music's
allowed. Correct. In other words, once the restriction that I'm suggesting kicks in, you should maintain it until the end of the mourning period. Okay. So the day before Tisha B'Av, I would suggest, I don't know if it's provable, but I would suggest that even a cappella shouldn't be done from midday and on. The night after Tisha B'Av, meat and wine are still not acceptable. And the day after, until midday, just while the Beis HaMikdash was still burning, so haircuts, bathing, music, washing clothes are still restricted, but your regular eating and that type of stuff are already permitted. Question?
So I cannot shave on Tuesday afternoon? That's what you're saying?
That's correct.
Not until Wednesday.
Can't shave and haircuts until Wednesday after, I believe the time is 1:05. Something like that.
1:05 in the afternoon.
Afternoon. Any other questions?
When did the meat restriction begin? Is that during the 9 days?
Yeah, the meat restriction, the reason for the meat restriction is twofold. One is that we are trying to remember the fact that the sacrifices which were of meat were not allowed to be brought because of the enemy stopping us. And the second thing is simple joy. Meat and wine bring joy. Wine was also used for libations in the temple, and that was stopped when the enemy set siege. So that is only restricted during the 9 days. So that's interesting, actually. It's 9 days plus a half day. I'm sorry, it's 9 days straight. I don't know why I said that. It's 9 days straight. The haircuts would be 3 weeks plus the half day, I guess.
And the meat includes chicken as well, correct?
Meat includes chicken, correct. During the 9 days, just the historical, if we still don't have the temple next year, if someone does have to eat meat, but chicken is an option, we certainly opt for chicken. It's considered downgraded. It's considered less. But in terms
poultry.
Of optimal
chicken, turkey,
birds, fowl. Mm-hmm. But in terms of ideal, optimal observance, we don't do either. If it's fleishik, then we don't do it.
Even
that's correct. Prevalent approach would be that if it's truly fleishik, there are reasons. If there was a reason, if there's no meat presence for real, meaning just the chicken soup, so that's worthy of discussion if there's good reason. Prevalent custom is we don't do anything that's classified as meat.
So matzah ball soup would be okay.
If matzah ball soup does not include chicken, I don't
right.
know how you make it.
Right, like out of like a.
You mean with a powder, chicken imitation?
When you have it, you know, right. You know,
chicken imitation.
No, well, when you have it, you know, like the packet.
Start fasting it. Making me hungry.
Well, we have time. We have time.
Oh, Jews are great. We'll tell you all the details.
I'm going to grab them, come, and I'm going to stuff
what
my face.
What if it's cooked in a meat pot? That doesn't matter.
Right, right. There is
not
no,
a problem.
There is no chicken. I check up inside out. You know, make sure, but it's, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Many shavits, you know, matzo
balls. I don't know exactly what level of observance
it.
They had between the first and the second.
Every Shabbos, you know, I can
it
wait.
It could be.
You know,
it was very, very similar, but I don't know.
I have matzo ball.
Every single one would have to be justified, you know, explain what its origin was.
Yeah,
but after the second temple, for sure, this is exactly the way it's been observed all the time.
Especially if it's good at 25 cents a pound. to stop and shop was going out of business. I don't know, after Stop and Shop, you know, was after the holidays.
Shop,
really?
Oh,
right.
Yeah?
Right.